Welcome to The Apple Seed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne, and today we've got a couple of stories for you about going to school. For me, that meant Alpine Elementary School in my little hometown, and then American Fork Junior High, where I rode on the bus every day from 7th to 9th grades, and then American Fork High School after that. School was a place to learn math and science and English and social studies, but it was a lot more than that. Learning to get along with folks, learning to deal with some of the first stresses you experienced outside your home, trying to find your place in the world, a lot of that happened in school. And in our first story today, Kim Whitecamp is taken back to some of her school memories when she finds her grandson is having some bully trouble at school. Here's Kim with a story she calls Recess.
My grandson had come to visit. And I have three grandchildren, but I try and take them one at a time every so often so that I can really dig into who they are, really have one-on-one time with them. Well, we were in the car driving to I don't know where, and I thought now's a good time to ask the question that I always ask my grandchildren when they come to visit. I said, "Hey, Josiah," I said, "is there anything right now that you're dealing with that you need to talk about? Something in your life that you just need a place to kind of let go? Because you know, Nana is a safe space. You know, I ask this question every time you visit." Well, as I drove the car, he didn't say anything. And so I looked over and his head was down and I thought, well, he's thinking. And then after a little longer, I looked down and I said, "Buddy, are you okay?" And he looked up at me and I could see that his eyes were red-rimmed. And I pulled the car over, turned it off, dropped the keys in my lap and said, "You have my full attention. What's going on?" And he said, "Nana, it's my hair." I said, "What do you mean it's your hair?" He said, "There's a kid at my school that makes fun of me. And so I have mom make sure that when we go get a cut, I take it down as low as I can. Because if I try and let it grow out, and I want to let it grow out," and a tear came down his cheek, "but I can't because this kid's always making fun of me." Now, what I need to tell you is this. My grandson is a beautiful mix of African-American and Caucasian, which that is a mix of Irish, French, Scandinavian, and German. So when he lets his hair grow out, it has a nice sheen of red. And apparently this kid felt like it was something worth picking on. And I said, "Well, you know what? Nana might have to visit and bring some cupcakes to that class." But as I sat there, I took his hand and I watched him as he poured out the whole thing and he kept talking and letting it all flow out, healing, right? And as I listened to him, I began to think that this is the moment I've waited for. This is the moment that my ancestors have paved the way for me to give wisdom to this boy. I'm a storyteller, and my friend Dovey says that storytelling is a mixture of knowledge and artistry, and it equals wisdom. This is what I live for. My daughters are 36 and 38. They're tired of my wisdom. So now my grandkids get it all. So as he poured it all out, I kissed that soft little skin and those sweet little fingers. And I said, "Buddy, look at me." He wiped the tear. He said, "What, Nana?" I said, "Listen." I said, "Nana is going to tell you something very, very important. This is something that you're going to need to remember for the rest of your life. You will pull this out for years to come and use it. And it's this. Suck it up." He said, "What?" I said, "You have a choice. You can either suck it up or you can step up. Those are your two choices in every situation that becomes difficult. Suck it up or step up." And I said, "I want to tell you something else." And I swiped his cheek and took the tear off of it. And I put it on his lip. I said, "Taste it." And he said, "What?" I said, "Taste it." I said, "You taste the salt?" I said, "Buddy, you know that whenever salt is put on food, you know how you like to put salt on food?" I said, "It actually chemically changes the food." I said, "You're going to cry tears your whole life. Tears of victory and defeat. Tears of loss and love. Tears of joy and sadness." And he said, "Why are you talking like Dr. Seuss?" And I said, buddy, listen to me. I'm serious. I said, this isn't the last time you're going to be crying tears. As a matter of fact, I'd like to tell you it's going to get better, but it won't, because there will be jerks all the way through school. There will be jerks in the cubicle and sometimes even in your own home. You're going to meet people. They're going to cause you to cry one way or the other. And when that tear comes, you have a choice as a man, as a young man, to decide how you apply the salt of those tears to your life. And how you apply the salt of those tears to your life and how you handle it will determine whether you're an average man or a great man. And I said, so you have a choice with this kid. You can either just suck it up or step up. And I said, you can either just keep cutting your hair and letting him wear you down with his words, or you can be who you want to be. And when he gives you trouble, you smile at him and just say thank you and walk away. And he said, Nana, you don't understand. You're old. I said, Josiah, same issues, different toys. That's the only difference between you and me. I said, you think I wasn't picked on when I was little? Back when I rode a mule to school, to the one-room schoolhouse in 1970? I said, buddy, I was a skinny, knobby-kneed, buck-toothed, red-headed, freckle-faced kid that wore hand-me-downs. I was picked on all the time. And to make it worse, I used to have to go to speech therapy. And if I'm really tired, it comes out and you can hear it when I'm talking. I used to say all of my essays like this. I said, do you know how horrible that was to be pulled out of class in front of this kid, Jim, that bullied everybody for speech therapy? I said, I was picked on all the time. And I said, I wasn't the only one. I said, I remember it when I was right in school, about your age in elementary school, it was our first day of art class for the year. And we were all sitting at our desks in a square, and we each had a ripped piece of construction paper and a popsicle stick. And the art teacher got out a great big tub of paste, and she passed it around, and we all dipped our popsicle stick in, put it on the construction paper, and moved it along. And when it got to Della, Della sat there and skimmed off the top and looked at all of us and smiled and licked that popsicle stick. Well, we thought that was the best thing ever, and we all laughed, except for Jim. I watched Jim with his steely eyes watch her do that. I watched him see her get all the attention and the laughter from everybody, and the next day we heard it coming out of his mouth. What are you doing, Elmer the cow? What are you doing, Elmer the cow? Moo. And we watched slowly as Della's shoulder began to drop and as her head began to kind of bow. And none of us did anything about it. We just sucked it up. I said, buddy, I was picked on too. I said, I'm going to tell you one time that really affected me. I said, we were out at play in the recess. And this is back in the days where there wasn't 15 aides and teachers on the playground. I said, I was having a great time. I was getting up to the slide, on the top of the slide, getting ready to slide down that metal slide that was reflecting the sun. It was 180 degrees. There was a pair of kids at the end that had melded onto the slide. And I was getting ready to just pull and push when I saw Danny Burry. I had a crush on Danny Burry. And he was standing there, and I knew what that meant. We were going to play Boys Chase Girls. I slid down as fast as I could. And when I got to the bottom, he said, you better run. And I began to run as fast as I could. And he counted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Here I come. And oh, off we went. My hair in the wind. I was smiling so hard. My teeth were dry. I glanced over my shoulder, and there he was behind me, his soft curls touching the top of his collar of his shirt. He had a button-down shirt that was open. It was flapping in the wind. He had a t-shirt on underneath it, and he didn't tie his shoes, and the tongues were wagging furiously, and I thought, he is so dangerous. As we rounded the corner of the school, I stopped, and I said, safe zone, you can't tag me. And he said, what's going on? And we stood there breathing heavy, and I said, look. And I pointed to the playground, and there was no one there. And he said, did you hear the bell? I said, no, I didn't hear the bell. There's no way that could be that the bell would have rang by now. And he said, well, let's go take a look. And so we began to walk up to the playground, and we noticed that all the kids were over at the corner of the school in a great big crowd. And as we walked up, we kind of walked through some kids so we could see what was going on. And there was Paul, in a fetal position on top of a pile of mulch that had just been dumped by a company that was going to be used for the landscaping. And there's Jim kicking mulch onto Paul. and Billy standing there laughing about it. I remember, and I was like fourth, fifth grade, standing there watching that. Now, let me explain Paul. Paul rode my bus, and when we would go to his house, I made sure I was always on that side so I could look at it because it amazed me. It intrigued me as a kid. Our house was neat as a pin, and we didn't have a lot. As a matter of fact, early on, we were poor until my father did good for himself. But all of us had our hair brushed, trimmed, teeth clean, dentist visits, even if they're hand-me-downs, they were clean, pressed, starched, and our house was neat as a pin. But Paul's house, I'd never seen anything like it. And every day I stared at it when we'd pull up. The porch sagged under the weight of so much junk on the front porch, all the way to the ceiling of the overhang. It was like it was a game of Jenga, and if you pulled one thing, everything would fall out. And right down the middle was a small path to the front door. And out would come Paul, every morning smiling. He always wore dirty dress shirts and dress pants that were too short and shoes that were dress shoes but you knew belonged to somebody else a long time ago. It was like Groundhog's Day every day for Paul, as if he'd forgotten the day before that everybody shunned him, didn't want to sit with him, and that Jim and even other people were mean to him. It's like he forgot because he'd get on the bus and go, "Hi, everybody." And as he'd walk down through, people would slide to the aisle so that he couldn't sit with them. He'd sit down behind me almost every time, and he'd say, "What did you bring for lunch? Did you pack? What'd you watch on TV last night? What are you going to be doing this weekend? Oh, wow, maybe this, maybe that, maybe that." And I'd sit there the whole time, nodding at him and talking to him as he leaned over my shoulder thinking, "Oh, am I going to be picked on for this later?" And then there he was, laying in a fetal position, legs up, arm over his head. And I remembered that the back of his shirt had come untucked out of his pants, and I could see his back, his lower back up to the middle, and it was sheened with sweat, and mulch was sticking to it. And I thought to myself, I shouldn't be seeing this. And it is the first adult moment I had in my life where I felt like I was in the middle of something that I shouldn't be in, that there was something that I should do, but I didn't. I told my grandson, I said, I can blame it on the fact that I was 11 or 12. But I said, what I'm going to really blame it on is that when the spotlight of hate is focused on someone else, sometimes we become very still because we do not want it to swing in our direction. And then, out stepped Peterson. Now, let me tell you about Peterson. Peterson was a good-looking kid, one of the tallest kids in our class. But I can only remember him saying about 30 words every year at school. Quiet. So sweet. And I remember one time he had been out on the playground. Now, we would have lunch. You'd down two or three cartons of chocolate milk, right? It's just the best. You would, like, save money to get as much chocolate milk as possible. I'm still dealing with the effects of all the chocolate milk I drank in elementary school. And you would drink all your chocolate milk, and then you didn't want to miss a minute of recess, so you wouldn't go to the bathroom. You'd go outside and play, and then you'd come in, and you'd be hot, so you would drink out of the water fountain, and then you go to class, and then you'd ask if you could go to the bathroom, and there's like 10 kids lined up. Well, we came in from recess one time, and somebody said, "There's somebody hiding in the coats." And Mrs. Charles walked over and parted the coats, and there was Peterson. And the whole front of his pants were wet, and he was crying. She pulled him out and she took him to the door and she said, "You go to the nurse and you have her call your mother." And off he went. All of us sat and talked in low whispers. We actually felt bad for him because it was one of the most serious things that we knew that we never wanted to have happen to us just happened to Peterson. And we were quiet and he didn't come back that day, but the next day he did. And the very first thing that happened was Jim. "P.P. Peterson. P.P. Peterson, what you doing, P.P.? What you doing, P.P. Peterson?" And now, after all of that, after Brad just sucked it up day after day, here we were at the corner of the school on the playground, and he stepped out of the group right in front of Jim. I still can stand here and feel the goosebumps that I had that day on the playground. We didn't know what was going to happen. And he took Jim and he put his hand on his chest gently and said, "Knock it off." Jim pushed back. Billy laughed. And Jim said, "What are you going to do about it?" And Bradley rose to his full height, slender like a willow, but tall. and said, "Why don't you find out?" Jim looked down at Paul, kicked another thing of mulch, punched Billy in the shoulder and said, "Let's go." And off they went. From that time on, any time Jim wanted to do something, you could see that he'd skate the horizon with his eyes to see if P.P. Peterson was standing around. If he was, he might cause a little trouble, but not anything serious. If he wasn't, we were at his mercy. I remember one day at lunch, I sat down beside him and I said, "I got a question." I said, "What happened?" And he said, "What do you mean? I don't know what you're talking about." I said, "What happened that made you do what you did with Jim? I mean, we've all dealt with it because we all went to the same school up and I mean, we all graduated together." And he said, "I don't know." He said, "I was just watching Paul and he thought, I've had the same thing done to me just in a different way and I got tired of it. And so I just stepped out of the crowd and I just stepped up, took care of it." I said, "But what if it went bad?" He said, "Then it would have went bad." I looked at my grandson and I said, "Do you understand? You can suck it up and let that boy whittle you down like a pencil and keep yourself deep down and quiet and not really who you are, or you can be who you are and deal with it. And it may come a moment where it turns bad." But I said, "I have a feeling that if that kid is doing it to you, he's doing it to other kids. And I'm going to tell you something else. That means somebody is doing it to him. And it's probably somebody that's an adult that shouldn't be." I said, "So you have a choice." I said, "What do you think?" He said, "I don't know." I said, "Would you have any questions?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Oh, honey." I said, "What?" He said, "Can we go for ice cream?"
That was Kim Whitecamp with Recess. And we got to tell you, after Kim finished telling us that story in the studio, she shared a photo with our studio audience of her grandson, Josiah, with his hair proudly grown out just the way he wanted. Way to go, Josiah. Well, listening to Kim, I was put in mind of a story about a friend of mine from high school. It's a story about how the way you treat the people you go to school with can make a big difference in their lives and in yours. It's a story I hadn't thought of in a long time, and so I called my old friend, Jerome, to refresh my memory as to the details. And man, that was a fun conversation. Jerome and I hadn't talked in way too long. Jerome played in a rock band when we were kids, and they had a lot of fans in the halls of American Fork High School. And one of those fans was a kid we'll call James. And James, in a lot of areas of his life, was having a pretty rough go of it. And as a result, James shuffled through the halls, looking at the floor most of the time. He didn't talk to many people. He didn't look many people in the eye. And James's hair hung ragged over his face. And he was beginning to grow the littlest bit of a peach fuzz beard. Anyway, Jerome and the guys in the band had plans to get spruced up for some band photos. And in preparation for the photos, Jerome was going to give them all haircuts. That was a skill Jerome had. And for one reason or another, Jerome invited James along, and they set up a little barber shop on Jerome's back porch. And James wound up getting a haircut as well, and a shave, too. In fact, Jerome took some care to teach James how to shave, so James could give himself a shave anytime he wanted one or needed one. And man, the next day, James came to school with a spring in his step. His head was up. He made eye contact with folks. He said hello. And somehow, news that Jerome had given James a haircut got just far enough that one of James's teachers sent Jerome a letter telling him what a difference that haircut seemed to make for James in class. Now, a haircut isn't a solution to every problem. Sometimes you just like your hair the way it is. There's nothing wrong with that. But this haircut seemed to make a difference for James. And that was about 35 years ago. And as Jerome told me that story again on the phone, he got a little choked up when he got to the part about that letter from the teacher. Learning that the things you do matter, that can be a big deal. And for Jerome, it set him on a path toward a decades-long career as a barber. I've sat in his chair a dozen times myself.
I always say that we often fail to see the most significant moments of our lives as they're going by. But a lot of those moments occur between us and our friends at school. And that's where Kim's story took me. Where did it take you? And who will you take along?
I want to introduce you to another show from the BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's called The Lisa Show, and it's hosted by comedian, believer, actress, single mother, Lisa Valentine Clark. The Lisa Show delves into the multitude of challenges and relationships that shape our lives, whether it's parenting, mental health questions, social issues. She and her council of moms will tackle it. She'll help you figure out this thing called life. With a lot of laughs along the way, Lisa is a great person to hang around with. The Lisa Show. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of places to listen to The Lisa Show whenever you like. The Lisa Show from BYU Radio.
We're so glad to have you with us today on the Appleseed. The next storyteller we have on the show is Tim Lowry, who tells us about his first days in grade school, meeting his first teacher. I bet this brings back some memories for you. Here's Tim with a story he calls Ross Point Elementary.
When I started school, I don't know if my parents went to a meet the teacher night or not. If they did, they did it without my knowledge. I don't remember meeting my first grade teacher until the very first day of school. Kindergarten hadn't been invented yet when I was a little boy. You just started right in on first grade. And on the first day of school, as I remember it, my mom just stood me out by the side of the road with a book sack and a Charlie Brown lunchbox, and I waited on a big yellow school bus to come by. And when the bus stopped and the doors opened, I climbed aboard and off I went to Ross Point Elementary School. I got off the bus with lots of other boys and girls that we picked up along the way. The school was a little country school. There was just one classroom for each grade. Sixth grade was at the top of the hall, and way down at the end of the hallway was the first grade classroom. The only thing beyond the first grade classroom was the cafeteria. And in one corner of the cafeteria, there was a large Persian rug with bookshelves on three sides and a lady with a mustache named Mrs. Howard, and she was our librarian. And that's where we checked out books. You could have lunch and check out a book from Mrs. Howard at the same time. In the first grade classroom was Mrs. Wilder. She was a force. We grew to love her, but we were always a little bit afraid of her as well. She kept a spoon. That was not for the cafeteria. Mm-mm. After we'd eaten our lunch, we'd go back to our classroom. We'd have to sit in our desks. Our desks had been used for generations. They all had a hole in the top right corner where you were supposed to put a glass bottle of ink in the inkwell hole. That was long gone, but the hole was still there. So you'd stick your finger in that hole and wind it round and round while you were reading your book. We had reading class after lunch, and we read a riveting volume. I still remember it. It went like this. See Dick run. Run, Dick, run. See Jane run. Run, Jane, run. See Spot run. Spot was Dick and Jane's dog. Run, Spot, run. Oh, my word, it was so boring. My friend Todd one day leaned over and said, get hit with a car, Spot, die. Anything just to liven up the reading class. And if you whispered or said a word while somebody was trying to read about Dick, Jane, and Spot, Mrs. Wilder always caught you. You thought you were being so quiet and discreet, but she would see. You would hear her push her chair back from her desk. She would stand, and she would bang across the hardwood floor in those sensible lace-up shoes she always wore, and she would reach for the spoon, and she would pull it out, and you were so shocked that you had gotten caught that you would go, you'd try not to, but you'd go, and she would take that spoon and wipe it off on the hem of her skirt and say, tongue needs something to do? Suck on this spoon a while, and she'd poke the spoon right in your mouth. Oh, yes. And you didn't dare take it out until she told you to. Mm-mm. And then when you went home on the big yellow school bus at the end of the day and you told your mom, Mom, Mrs. Wilder stuck a spoon in my mouth today. Your mom did not threaten to call the principal or sue the school board. Mm-mm. Your mom would say the same thing everybody else's mom would say. She'd say, "Course you did. You're supposed to be reading about Dick, Jane, and Spot. I got spooned by Mrs. Wilder when I was in first grade." That's how everybody in my county learned to read. You got spooned by Mrs. Wilder several times, and then you knew how to read about Dick, Jane, and Spot. Now, if you talked in math class, she had a different punishment for you. She was going to move you away from your friends. Not that that's ever happened to any of you in your school days. And when she was going to move you away from your friends, she's just going to move you desk and all. Because we were little kids sitting in a little desk, you know, so she'd just move you chair and all. She would drag your desk over to this big old window. And then she would always stop. And they were big triple sash windows. And she'd always stop and she'd say, "First, never stick your head out that window." And that was a very, very important rule, because those things, sometimes the top sash would fall and it would come flying down, and that was like a guillotine. I mean, you did not want to have your head out that window. And then she'd say, "Now, mathematics. You see that tree outside the window on the playground?" "Yes, ma'am." "In 10 minutes, I'm going to ask you how many leaves are on that tree. And if you don't have the right answer, oh, you're going to wish you did." Well, we figured she knew how many leaves were on that tree. I mean, there was a plaque on the side of it that says she had planted it Arbor Day, 1967, so we figured she knew how many leaves were on that tree. And we'd start counting. Now, my friend Todd, I was never brave enough to talk back to her, but Todd, he would always do that. One day he had to count leaves, and he said, "I don't care. My brother Spencer was in first grade last year, and he had to count leaves lots of times. He told me how many are on it." She said, "Uh-uh." You could never get ahead of her. She said, "Every fall, they all come off, and in the spring, it's a new number, and God tells only me. So start counting." Of course, school starts in the fall of the year, so you'd start counting. The wind would blow, and leaves would fall off. "Oh, no." You'd lose track. She'd say, "See there? You can't even subtract a few leaves from the total number on a tree. That's called mathematics. You need to know this stuff. Get your desk and get back in line." "Yes, ma'am." She rode the school bus with us. Yeah, we heard her tell the bus driver, "Why pay for gasoline when the bus will take you to work for free?" She lived in a big old Victorian house up on a hill, and our bus would go right up the hill and pick her up practically right off her front porch, because she was old. We didn't want her to fall and break a bone or anything. And one day, the bus stopped at the bottom of the hill, and the driver opened up the door, and he called up the driveway, and he said, "Wilder! You know people have been teaching a long time when their colleagues drop the Mr. and Mrs. and they just call them their last name like a football team. You know, he calls up the hill, "Wilder!" She says, "What is it?" He says, "Your driveway's too slick. The roads were clear, but it was a winter day and her driveway was all icy." He said, "I can't get up there to get you." She said, "I can't miss school. I can't miss school." She ran around behind her house. In a few minutes, she came back with a cardboard box. She ripped that box open flat and sat down on it and went vroom right down the hill, threw that cardboard over in the weeds, climbed on the bus, and we all went, "Yay!" She put one hand to her heart, complete silence. The spoon was ever present. I think she is a big reason why I became a storyteller. On Fridays, she would say, "Boys and girls, please come to the story rug." And we were allowed to get out of our seats and come and sit on a big rug where there was a rocking chair in the corner of the room. And then if you were really good, if you had been an exceptional student all week, she might call your name at story time on Friday, and you'd be allowed to go around behind her desk and fetch from the shelf the big book. We didn't know what was in there, but we figured if it is not in the Bible, it is in the big book. And it was a very old book. You had to carry it carefully because it would tear. She would put this big volume on her lap. It was an anthology filled with fairy tales. It had all of them, all the authored stories of Hans Christian Andersen, all the Brothers Grimm, all the stories of Charles Perrault, and she would select favorites and read to us. Well, she'd been reading these stories for so many years that all she had to do was get started, and then she'd lay the book aside and she would begin to tell us the story and act it out. And she did not tell versions that were all colored and decorated up. No, she gave you the real stuff. You know, like in the original Cinderella, the wicked stepsisters, they know their big ugly feet not going to fit in that glass slipper. So one of them takes a cheese grater and rakes the back of her heel off with it and shoves her foot in that shoe. And the prince would have never been the wiser, except he saw blood oozing out the top of the shoe. And of course, we loved it. We would always call more, more. Yeah. Yes. I love first grade so much, I stayed a second year. My life is very full of all kinds of wonderful memories, lots of them from my school teachers. I'm always shocked when someone says they don't remember much about school. I could tell you about every teacher I ever had and what they did and what they said and the influence they had on me. And I would just like to say thank you.
That was Tim Lowry with Ross Point Elementary. What are some of your school memories? Do you remember a teacher or a friend that made an impact on your life for good? Do you remember a hairstyle, either long or short, that defined you during your school days? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. We might share them on the show. You can tag us on social media or send us a message at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, @byu.edu. We always love to hear from our listeners. And one of our online listeners, who goes by @jukebox09, left us a comment saying, "Man, this takes me back to elementary school when you'd go to the library once a week and the librarian would invite storytellers to come tell the best stories. I could sit in my library and read all day." Oh, man, we feel the same way about those library experiences and about stories. Thanks to @jukebox09 for chiming into the conversation. And listen, we'd love to hear from you, too. Feel free to leave us a comment. We want to thank Kim Whitecamp and Tim Lowry for sharing their stories with us today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, and Brian Tanner. Assistant producers include Garrett Gunnell, Carrie Griggs, Kay Hendrickson, and Nico Wetzel. And our post team is Trent Reimschussel and DJ Cromartie. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcasts, Kaboom for original audio adventures, and Wink, stories for better bedtimes. All our podcasts can be found on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on the BYU Radio app or at byuradio.org. Don't forget to subscribe, rate us, leave us a review. That's how the shows grow. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on the Appleseed.